This program is a paid presentation for American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC, and is brought to you by American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC. The opinions expressed on the program by the host, host guests, and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not represent the opinions of management of this station or Brazos Communications West, LLC, who bear no responsibility or liability for the program's content. The purpose of this radio program is intended to inform the public on financial planning issues and investment products for qualified individuals and investors. Many of the topics and opinions discussed may be of a personal nature, and some people may disagree with or find opinions expressed on this program objectionable. Before you invest, you should consult with financial advisors and review the program prospectus and its risks.
97 Gold presents Your Money with Faye Bagby. Sound advice to help your money grow. Now, here's Faye Bagby on 97 Gold.
Good morning.
Good morning, Faye. How are you?
I'm wonderful. But then I'm always wonderful because it's Saturday.
You do. You tend to love Saturday. I feel like Saturday is probably your favoriteest day of all the days of all the weeks.
It is. I like Saturday because it's a day where I can just say, okay, today I'll do this.
Yeah.
I don't have to be at the office. I can do this. I can go eat at some favorite places. There's just all kinds of things a girl can do on a Saturday.
All kinds of trouble a girl can get into, too.
That's exactly right. I'm never at a loss for something to get into, let me tell you. You know how my little mind works.
I know.
Yeah, you're best to watch that about me.
Yeah, and it'll be by accident too, because I know I've heard your stories, and it's always by accident. It's never planned when you get into trouble.
That's right. I didn't go to do it, as the little kid says.
Yeah,
you know, it just happened that way.
It just happened.
Yeah, it just happened. I didn't plan it.
Oh. Ooh, of course, now, if we were to plan to get into trouble, I'm sure it would work out much better than the accidental version.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I would start out and say, okay, now we're going to do this. And knowing at the time, you know, that's probably not what I should be doing.
Yeah. But at least you can plan it through. And so if something goes terribly wrong, you have a plan to get out. But when it's an accident, it just sneaks up on you. And before you know it, trouble's got you, by the jaw.
That's right, and you've already done something, and there you are.
Yeah, and there you are.
And there you are, that too.
All right, did you have a good fourth?
I did have a good fourth.
Good.
This was a strange fourth. You know, the fireworks started on the weekend. I don't understand that. Usually you have 4th of July, all your fireworks are on that day and that night. It didn't happen that way this year. They had things like at the Motor Speedway out here, you know, the big one, they had everything this weekend. And then there was lots and lots of fireworks over the weekend.
Yeah.
Lots of celebrations. But I went to parades. Oh, I love a parade. There's nobody loves a parade like me.
Oh, yeah.
So I took the grandchildren. We went to the parade as usual. It was wonderful. Oh, my gosh. And the police had parked a little Hummer, a little police Hummer there on the street. And my grandchildren they were excited about it. Now, to me, it was just, you know, but it was, you know, painted military. And they had to have their picture made with it even.
Oh, of course. That's impressive.
Oh, yeah. And the little ones just loved that. And we loved everything about the parade. They had a lot of horses, gorgeous horses, lots of fire trucks, and because it was put on by the firemen, you know. So it had lots of gorgeous things. A lot of the kids rode on them. There was some vintage cars in it. Just lots of great, great things. And it was all neighborhood people. That's what I liked.
Nice.
Wow. Oh, it was nice. And then last night and the night before, you know, they had lots of fireworks, but not just on the 4th. I was really shocked this year that you could just look it up and there was fireworks every night going on.
Yeah, I know. It was the same thing here. It was, you know, celebrations started last weekend and there were some things going on. And then there were a few things during the week, like Wednesday even on the 3rd. And then on the 4th, there was a lot of things. And then it seems like there's a couple of straggly events going on this weekend too, like tonight or this afternoon and things like that. But yeah, it was really kind of strange. Maybe people just decided to instead of trying to cram everything everything into one weekend and people can't go to everything. They kind of spread it out a little bit since it was in the middle of the week, kind of take advantage of both weekends that bookend it. So it was nice.
And, you know, most people, of course, everybody makes barbecue, I think. Some may make steaks, but I think everybody does barbecue. I was at a place ordering some myself, and the people that own it, I heard this lady order from them. Her bill was $565 for barbecue.
Wow.
Now, how many people, I was trying to compute it, how many people do you think she was going to feed?
Probably, I would say at least 50.
Well, I was thinking 30, so maybe it's 50, but it was a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, I was in shock.
Wow.
I couldn't imagine having that many at your house.
Boy, she ought to start charging for that. You know, anybody that comes over, family members or not, here, $10.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, her bill was $586.
Goodness gracious.
And I thought, holy cow, that is a lot of food.
That is a very expensive barbecue. And hopefully she had some left over so she can enjoy it after the fact.
Well, I hope so. If you spend $500, you should have it more than one day, right?
I know. That's, you don't want that gone in 10 minutes and then just go, what happened?
Well, she must have had some big eaters.
Yeah,
I said.
Evidently.
I believe she had some great big eaters, you know?
Well, it sounds like it might have been the place to go.
Yeah, I mean, if we'd known where she was, you know, we could have helped her out a little bit.
Yeah, just crash that July 4th party.
That's right. And just enjoyed that deal. But everything I heard all over was, you know, great things about parties and food, and seemed like the fireworks were just outstanding.
Yeah, yeah. Fireworks are always impressive. You know what I love most about the fireworks? Not only is all the booms and the displays and the sounds and all that, but I love if you're in a right position and you get in the right place where the wind is blowing. I love that after fireworks smoke that blows around. I don't know why. It's just it seems like it's part of the celebration, I think, at least to me. And it's not very often that you can get close enough to you know, to get a little taste of the fireworks smoke that comes afterwards. But when you can, boy, I just think that's just, it adds a whole new layer to the experience.
I never had thought about that. And you know, some years I've noticed these real expensive fireworks, they're over in 18 minutes. Have you ever timed that?
I have not, no.
Well, they're burning that stuff fast. I mean, it's going fast. But now, last night, it seemed like it lasted quite a long time.
Yeah.
It seemed to me like it was a 30-minute deal before all of them were gone.
Yeah, it might have been.
And they were beautiful.
Yeah.
Man, there's just nothing like fireworks.
Yeah, they're really cool. And the things that it seems like they've really gotten more technology and more advanced over the years. And so now instead of just the ones that go up and balloon out into like a big mushroom, they have all kinds of designs and things that burn longer, and it turns into something else. And then it's really neat what they can do.
It is, and we've come a long way on fireworks, I can tell you.
Yeah, we have. Goodness.
Oh, man. Well, we better give out the phone number.
We should. What is your number?
Okay, it's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And we're at 3105 Big Spring, right next to Ivy Cottage.
This is Your Money with Faye Bagby, and it's all about growing your money so you can retire happy, wealthy, and early. Do you find that people like to retire early, or do they actually like to go all the way to the you know, to the end and you know, just kind of go the traditional route?
It's different for everybody. A lot of people are like me and in a plan to work forever. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, because that's what they do. They like it. But then we have people at 58, 59 years old. They're through.
Yeah.
They're out. And they're going to walk out the door just the moment they can. So everybody is really different. And I think it depends on how young you are and how young you feel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you've worked for one employer, you're going to retire early, I can tell you that. But if you've worked for more than one, it seems like you're a happier person, and you're happier going to work every day. But people who've worked for one employer for 30 or 35 years, they want to out. They just want to go home.
Yeah.
They want to go fishing. They want to go play golf. They want to do something different. And at 58 or 59, they're ready.
You know, we talk all the time about how planning for retirement is so essential, and so, you know, so many people just, they don't do it. They procrastinate, like you always say. They put it off. They just don't want to think about it. What if we took the approach of, hey, just general wealth management, general wealth growth? What if we took the retirement aspect out of it and just kind of said, hey, you need to grow your money, you know, regardless of what you're doing. If you got some money in an account and it's not growing, you're not growing your money. You're almost losing money at that point. So just general wealth management, does that give a different spin? Because I wonder if sometimes people hear the word retirement and the R word scares them, and it becomes intimidating. Oh, that's not fun. I don't want to do that. It's so far away. But general wealth management is something that you could enjoy now, or if you wanted to, like a lot of people do, grow that money, put it away so that it's there for retirement itself. Does this apply to general wealth management growth?
Well, it could, it could not, because it's like this. Everybody should want to grow their money. I don't care who you are or how old you are. You need to be growing your money or you're backing up. Mm-hmm. You know, with inflation, if you're not growing that money, it's not doing you a lot of good.
Yeah.
But then if you're really smart, and our clients are, you know, really smart, they are trying to accomplish something. They're not just growing the money for the fun of it. They say, look, we want to have a substantial amount of money when we retire. We don't want to be poor. We don't want to have to go back to work after we retire. We want to sail into retirement and go do fun things.
Okay, so they all have goals in mind.
That's right. They have goals. They're not just, you know, saying, oh, well, we'll just grow our money at, you know, 1% or 2% at the bank and let it go with that. You know, they're not doing that. And they're not saying, well, my 401k has lost this much money, or my IRA, you know, has lost this much money because I did something stupid, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They're saying, what can I do to accomplish what I'm going to need 20 years from now, or maybe 5 years from now?
So now that you've opened that door, as far as having a goals are concerned, what kinds of things do people, you know, put on that list? What kind of things are they striving for?
Well, the people that I talk to say, first of all, guarantee of their principal. That's more important to them than anything. You know, they get at a certain age, they kind of get leery of the stock market and say, I do not want to lose what I've already got, and I need to grow it some more. So they're saying, maybe I shouldn't be 100% in the stock market.
Mm-hmm.
And most people about 60 years old, they get this. They say, no more. I'm not going to do it. And the people that have come to me, even this last year, that is their consensus, is my money is not going to grow if I leave it there, because here's what I've accomplished in 10 years, and it's not that great, folks.
Yeah.
And we hear people talk every day in New York City about all this money that the stock market's making, how far it's up, but I don't see it on their statements.
Mm-hmm.
And even the people that have annuities, I have one folks that this last year on their annuity, when we got the statement, they had not made that much. And usually you always make quite a bit with an annuity. But that particular thing they had invested in their annuity, it didn't show that big a gain. And that's why I'm saying, if it's gaining so much, why isn't it showing up?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what I can't figure out.
Yeah, and I think people get into that pattern of, well, I'm in the stock market and I haven't lost anything, so I must be doing okay. You know?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't lose everything, so I'm all right.
that's kind of a dangerous place to be. You know, if you look at the statement and you kind of think, I think sometimes it's an eye-opener, and they think, wow, geez, I thought I was doing so much better. As I look at this, I'm really not. And that's just assuming that you can even read the statement, because, you know, some people, it just doesn't make any sense. And so you look at that thing and you say, wow, you know, I've been in the stock market for all these years. I haven't been getting what I should be getting. And now there's this threat. And I want to ask you this. And I know that nobody really knows 100% for sure in advance. But a few months ago, we were talking and there was a little bit of chatter about a potential for a stock market crash worse than what we saw in the 60s. Is that chatter going away? Is it still happening?
Well, every once in a while they get some really good news, and so it goes up. The market goes up. They say, oh, my gosh, we're going to make all this money. And then it drops 150 points.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Like last week, you know, it went up, and everybody, oh, my gosh, interest rates are going to come down again, and we're just going to sail through. And then I saw where it dropped 150 points.
Yeah.
And I go, it went up, but it also came back down 150 points.
Wow.
And you know, I don't know what to think about it.
You know, but that's what happens with people. You know, we go right along, and sometimes there's a little advanced warning. Sometimes there's not. It can just happen out of nowhere. You know, it's going very, very well, and then all of a sudden, boom, people lose everything. And the worst thing that can happen is that people get caught by surprise. And then they're in a situation where, you know, they've got 10 years or maybe 20 years of investing. Any growth that they may have had is gone in an instant. And so when you get caught with that element of surprise, sometimes that can even be more devastating than the financial loss. Then once the financial loss kicks in, then you realize, oh my goodness, now I'm in some serious trouble. And so then people are scrambling trying to find another thing. And so I think the thing that we need to remember, especially back in 2008, 2009, is you probably want to do something to have some kind of a safety net, some kind of a plan B in case something does happen. Because if all your eggs are in one basket and the market crashes, we saw what happened. It was devastating to so many people, and some still haven't recovered. So that's why what you offer over there is such a wonderful program, because you give people a chance to invest in a life insurance policy, which is so much different than the stock market, right? I mean, it's not even close.
It's a completely different concept. It's an alternate investment. I don't say that hardly ever, but it is. It's an alternate method to what they're used to. And it seems like now it's big business. Billions of dollars are being made through life insurance policies. You know, the big boys are doing this now. The mutual fund companies are getting into it because they see it as a little safer than some other investments. And so they're saying, you know, let's do some life settlements. And they are. They say it's going to be a $60 billion a year business. And and this last year they said that they made more than anything else last year. That it outperformed the other investments that people had, and that's what we read this last week. That it did outperform. It did make more money last year than a lot of the others because, and we saw where people had bonds, oil company bonds. That only paid 5%.
Yeah. So they're essentially not worth anything.
Yeah. And so and a lot of the oil company bonds paid 4%.
Mm.
So, and we know one company, and I won't say who it is, their bonds actually lost money. So those people have got a loss on their books, and they said they've lost 8 years in a row now with that one bond.
Wow.
Because that company has not made any money. So the bond is worth less now than when they started out, and that's not a good thing.
No, that's kind of that's a scary thing to look at, because a lot of people think, well, bonds are they're safe-ish. They grow steadily, slowly, but at least there's a. I don't think people think a lot of, about how bonds could actually lose value, and so there's so many chances for people to lose money. And so I think one thing to note is when you're in a life insurance policy, the value doesn't go down, and nothing affects it. So regardless of what happens on Wall Street, if the stock market was to crash tomorrow, it would not affect a life settlement. Is that correct?
That is exactly right, because it's a life insurance policy. And this is different than anything most people have ever done before. A life insurance policy, we know they always pay off. We know that it's huge, huge life insurance companies that are writing the paper. And everybody knows if they've known that they have life insurance because it pays off. When people die, life insurance policies kick in and pay you, you know, whatever amount you're insured for. So that's why I love life insurance policies, because we know that they don't have to rely on me or anyone else. It's the life insurance company that will pay them when the policy matures. That's the greatest thing about the investment.
Mm-hmm. So people really, the hardest part with something like this is just the waiting game. It's, you know, you invest and you set it and forget it and just basically wait for the policy to mature. You don't have to get up in the middle of the night and wonder, oh my gosh, what happened overseas? Oh my gosh, what happened here? Oh my gosh, you know, is the stock market crashing? And what do I have? Do I have anything left? None of that happens because you literally, all you have to do is just wait for the policy to mature.
That's exactly right. And, you know, we had another maturity this week, and there's quite a few people in it, and it was a prostate cancer, and, you know, it was like 4 months late, I think.
Mm.
They called it almost exact, but I think it was 3 months, 4 months late.
That's pretty close.
It was very close. And, you know, it was a $500,000 policy.
Wow.
So, you know, people made very good money.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just every time a policy matures, it reminds us again of why we do life insurance policies, because they pay off and, you know, we get paid and we renew it and we go on. And it's not a one-time thing. If they have an IRA, we just roll it over and do another policy. We're supposed to have this next week. We've been waiting and waiting for these policies. We have about five policies that we won that we're waiting on the contracts, and they're supposed to be in this next week.
Oh, cool.
And again, these are people that are renewing, and we're rolling over their money to new policies because they've had all these policies mature. And one of our clients seems like every time I turn around, his name is on the policies. He's one that told me the other day, I want to invest a large amount.
Uh-huh.
I don't want to invest $50,000 or $75,000. I want to do like $150,000.
He's making too much money and wants to keep it going.
That's right. He's making a lot of money this last 2 years, and he has a lot of policies. That's another thing. You need to be diversified. You've got to have several policies, or it won't work.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, if you've got one policy, you're going to be waiting 2 years or 18 months or 30 months for that one policy to mature. So everybody comes in and they say, what is the average amount of policies people have? And I tell them they have 6 to 10.
Okay.
And it works really well because you may have some go over, but you're going to have a lot that are going to come in on time or early.
Yeah, and I would imagine probably that kind of a plan keeps things always moving. So, you know, as one matures, you know, you take that, roll into another policy. As you're starting another policy, a little while later, another one matures. Then you're getting into another one. And so it's almost like this stair-stepping effect, which keeps that cycle going, which makes people more and more money, especially when you add it up over, you know, a couple of years. That adds up really, really quick.
It does. And I know a lot of our people that have been with us a long time, it's just steady for them. They just keep plotting and plotting, making money, going out of town. I have one client that travels in his RV all year. And so he only comes back like once a month, once every 2 months. If he needs to sign papers, if he needs to do something with us, he comes and checks things, and he's gone again. And he doesn't have to worry about it. He knows that we will send him an email whenever he has a policy that matures. Doesn't matter if he's in Colorado, in the Cool Pines, or New Mexico. Doesn't matter where he's at. He gets notice, and he knows that then he'll be put in his bank account, and he doesn't have to do a thing. That's the nice thing. Doesn't matter where you're at. If you're traveling or abroad, it doesn't matter where you are. It'll go into your account.
So if you're like this guy and you're driving around, you're traveling and you're gone for long periods of time, if a policy matures, you don't have to come back and sign paperwork. It just goes in their account. And then when, I guess, and correct me if I'm wrong here, I'm just kind of assuming, but then when another policy comes available, you can do all the transition of, hey, let's put this into this coming policy. You can do all that over email or phone or something like that. He doesn't have to come back and sign for that either, right? Is that right?
Well, now, he'll have to sign the contract on the new one.
Okay.
But he can do that from wherever he's at.
Okay.
And, lots of times people will say, just email it, I'll sign it, and get it back to you. And that's what they do.
Okay, so what I'm hearing is that this kind of investment does not interfere with anybody's life whatsoever. They don't have to do any kind of special anything. They can go about living. They don't have to worry about anything. You'll send them an email. Hey, this policy is maturing. Hey, we have a new policy you can go into. All that can be done electronically, and then boom, boom, and they're in and making money.
That's exactly right. So, you know, you don't have to be in town all the time. Now, a lot of people are in town all the time.
Yeah.
You know, they don't travel because they're still working. But I'm talking about my retired people that are traveling all the time, and they don't have to be here, you know, to get their money. As I said, they can be in another state, and the money's going to go into their account, and they don't have to worry about it.
That's got to be one of the most freeing feelings ever, is to know that you can be anywhere in the country or really the world, and to know that that money is just going to show up when the policy matures. Do you find that people are often pleasantly surprised with, like, they're traveling around, they're on vacation, they're in Europe, they're on a cruise, whatever, and all of a sudden they get a notice that says, hey, X amount of dollars is going into your account in the next couple weeks because this policy matures. Do you find that they, like, forget about it, and they see that, and they're like, oh, wow, neat, cool.
They do, and they all, what I love about our clients is they all send me a little note. They'll say, thanks, Faye, or you're doing a good job, or, you know, something like that, and we appreciate that. Mm-hmm. When they send us a little note, now I've got a couple of people that don't do that. out of all of our clients, I've got a couple of people, they just kind of grunt, you know? I mean, they don't send out the greetings like everybody else, but everybody else always says thank you very much, or great news. I mean, they send something really positive because they're excited that they've made some money. But I've got a couple of people that they just take it for granted, you know.
Yeah.
Sure, I had that coming. Okay, it's all right. I mean, you know,
Well, I would imagine probably anybody coming over from Wall Street and a traditional stock market type of investment, I would imagine those people are super appreciative of not only the process, but the type of investment, because we're talking about life insurance policies. They don't have to worry about the value going away. They don't have to worry about, you know, do I have any portfolio left? They don't go through any of those stresses that they probably used to. I'm sure they're super appreciative of, you know, that you're, you know, looking for great policies on top of everything else. You know, you're getting these ones that are highly specific. We'll get into the types of policies here in a minute, but I'm sure that they are so you know, no matter how many years they've been doing this, I imagine still they're very, very grateful of the entire setup and how you do all this.
That's right, and our clients are probably the best in the world. You know, they're very polite people, they're very nice people, and I love working with them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I hear people say this client is difficult or that client's difficult, and they tell me these stories. But you know, I don't have that problem. I don't have people that are, you know, really difficult to work with.
Yeah,
we have some of the best in the whole world, and they've got a positive attitude, and you know, I love what they say about the policies. Like, you know, when we're offering them one, they make it right back and say something about that policy, you know. Do you think it's going to be that quick, or, you know, something about it? You never know.
Yeah.
But, yes, they're the greatest people in the world to work with.
So, and I know this is a loaded question, and it can change with all kinds of variables depending on, you know, who it is, how much they put in, the number of policies they're in. I get all that. However, for the person who's hearing this for the first time and is thinking about it seriously for the first time, how much money can people make? And I know it varies, but in general, how much can people make? Because they're asking that question right now. This sounds great. I love it.
You know, the average is about 22%. That's about the average of what a person is making.
Mm-hmm.
We went back. You know, we do studies all the time. We do studies on how long it takes us to process a claim. We do studies on how long it took us to get the contracts back. Because, you know, we've been having trouble in the last 3 weeks, you know, on a contract. So now we're doing a study on that. How long is it taking average for us to get the contracts back from our provider? You know, how long is it taking? We need to know all this. So we work on this all the time. We do a study on everything we do. And we do a study on how many people died of breast cancer, How many was it pancreatic cancer? You know, stomach cancer. What is killing people the most?
Mm-hmm.
So we do a study on all that.
So how many policies on average would you say mature in a year's time, on average?
Gosh.
I know, that's a tough question.
I mean, that is a tough one. I'd say 25, 30.
Wow.
Yeah, I think I'm right. I need to go back and check that to be exact. But we have a lot.
So the average person may be in, say, 5 or 7 at a time average?
Yes. Okay. Because remember, in the first quarter, we had, 6 or 7 mature
yeah.
in the first quarter.
Yeah, I know. It was
so
big.
We had a lot. And we've had almost one a week since then.
Hmm.
So I'm sure we have probably 25 mature in a year's time. And, you know, we know that we've got like 98 million invested.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we have a lot of investments and a lot of people in those investments. I think we have, I don't know exactly how many clients we have. It's close to 600.
Wow, that's a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot to keep up with.
so let's just say, I'm just going to run some pretend hypothetical numbers here. let's say somebody's in policies and they're all $100,000 investments. Let's say somebody, let's just go some kind of average number here, 20 months, which would be 20%. That'd be $20,000 for one investment, right?
That's exactly right.
Then we'll say somebody has 5 maturities a year. That ends up being $100,000 a year. Now, I know these are all hypothetical, but I mean that's kind of it's too much to ignore. And I know things vary. I know policies go over. Some policies come in late. Somebody may not have 5 maturities a year. You never know. But this seems like pretty much average right down the middle types of numbers. So to come up with $100,000 a year in profit on this type of investment, does that seem roughly, I mean, maybe 90,000 in some cases? Does that seem
I know one person told me they made 94,000 last year.
Wow.
But remember, the only thing you're going to be wrong about is they made the ones that came due might not have all been their $100,000 ones.
Yeah.
Some of them could have been their $50,000 or their $75,000.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't know what size all the maturities were.
Yeah.
So you've got to say, okay, some of them might have been $50,000. So you should average it. We average everything. There might have been 3 at 100, and there might have been 2 at 50.
Yeah. So cut it
from one person.
Say even somebody pulls in $50,000 a year.
That's right.
I mean, it's jarring is what it is. It's enough when you run the math, because we talk about these policies all the time, but you run some numbers like this and all of a sudden that's enough right there to smack you in the face and reality starts to set in. It's like, holy smokes. You know, like you said, that one person made 94,000, you know, others it could be more, it could be a little bit less, but still we're talking about not doing anything really to get this money. It's not like you've had to go out and get a second job, or it's not like you've had to, you know, do some labor intensive anything. We're talking about you literally invest and wait. And those numbers are too hard to ignore.
That's exactly right. So, you know, you have to say, you know, it works. We know it's working. You know, they may be in all their policies may be 24 months.
Mm-hmm.
They may have one at 12 months or 14. So, you know, it's just a basket of different times that their policies are going to come due. Then you've got to say, okay, they had 2 that went over that year.
Yeah.
So you just map it out, okay?
Okay.
That's the way I do it.
And the thing that, that people need to remember is this is not a one-and-done type of investment. This is a plan. This is a strategy that happens over many years. When we say many, it could be anywhere from 5 to, you know, 15 or 20. It just kind of depends on where people are in life when they start. So this is not the kind of thing where you get in one time and you make a $1 billion overnight. It's not that. You get in, like we say, you know, a number of policies, and then while some are due, you're getting in new policies, and then those come due and they roll over into new policies. And so, but the point is that it all adds up real quick. So you take these massive numbers that people are making in a year's time, you multiply that by 5 years, 10 years, even 15 years, whatever the case may be, and it's just crazy the money people can make. So there's no wonder when you run these why this is becoming, you know, a $1 billion industry and why so many people are on board. And so that's what makes it so wonderful. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. It's 877-588-3330. And we're at 3105 Big Spring, right next to Ivy Cottage.
Now, every Saturday morning, we get into trivia, and you always bring interesting, fun things to the table, whether it's a place to go, maybe a summer vacation trip, or some Texas history, or something to put on our bucket list. So what are we talking about this morning?
Drive-in theaters.
Ooh!
Yeah! When do you think the first drive-in theater was?
Oh, gosh, I couldn't even begin to guess.
Well, it's a lot farther back than I thought. I thought the first one was in the 50s, and I'm wrong. The very first one opened in Camden, New Jersey, 86 years ago.
Really?
And then the first one in Texas was on July 5th, 1934. It was the drive-in short reel theater in Galveston on the beach.
Oh.
I'm just shocked. I did not know about it.
Wow.
It cost $1,500 to build it. The cars were facing out the sea over the Gulf of Mexico.
Wow.
And it was 25 cents or 10 cents. An adult could walk in and sit on the beach for 10 cents. And it was 5 cents for kids. Now, this thing only operated 20 days before a hurricane destroyed it.
Oh, no.
Yeah, the very first one in Texas. But can you imagine, in Texas, most of these were in the 50s.
Yeah.
There was 400 drive-ins by the 1950s.
Really?
We had the most of any state in the country.
Of course.
And then Texas held out longer than any place. They still had over 200 drive-ins in the 70s. And, of course, then they started going down. Now 96% of all the original ones are gone, but we still have 18 drive-ins operating in Texas.
Really?
We have one in Abilene, Texas, and they said they spent $250,000 on it.
Wow.
The Tascosa drive-in, which I'm really familiar with, was in 1952, and it had twin screens on the north and south end of the property. And Austin still has one. They built it in 2009.
Wow.
And Buda, Texas, has a twin screen, and it's new. I can't believe they built new ones in 2009.
I know, and I would have thought they would have stopped building it maybe in the 70s.
Yeah, I mean, I would have thought so. The Coyote Drive-In in Fort Worth, Texas, it was opened in 2013.
Wow.
And they have four screens.
Wow.
The old Gatesville Theater opened in the 1950s, and they changed the name a lot, but it's still there. Graham, Texas still has one, and Granbury, of course. And I'm just shocked that some of these were built, you know. In Mercedes, Texas, they have one that was started in the 40s, and it was snuffed out during the thinning of the drive-ins, went dark in 1984.
Oh, wow.
And Midland has one that was opened in 2005.
Yep, yep.
And it was called Big Sky.
Yep.
New Braunfels, they opened one in 2015. And I'm just, you know, I'm shocked. that they're building them, this late when I thought drive-ins was just about gone.
Yeah, I thought they were a dying breed. You know, in fact, when we moved here several years ago and I first found out that that Midland had a drive-in theater, I said, what? Are you sure? Because I haven't heard of any or seen any in years. And so I was shocked that they still had them. And they've come so long, too. Remember how when you first started, you had that big, clunky, heavy speaker that you would hang on your window?
I remember all about that.
Yeah.
Let me tell you something. Years ago, when I was very young, I worked at a drive-in theater.
Really?
So that's how I learned all about them. And how the film works on the projectors. You've got at least two projectors in there. And if you don't watch that film, it can run out. You have to get it glued together and put it on this little machine over there, and and you patch it together. Then you have to have it ready when the other's about to run out. You push the button on the other, and it starts the other machine.
Really? I had no idea.
Oh, yeah. So they all have two projectors. You've got one running, and you've got this other one almost ready, and you better be awake and have that thing ready, or the screen will go blank when that other one runs out.
Then you got a lot of horns honking right there.
And what do you remember as the best drive-in food?
I don't know, because I remember popcorn, pizza, and hamburgers.
Oh, my. Well, I remember the chili with the Fritos on it, the chili pies.
I forgot
that
about
was
that.
Big. Yeah, that was big. And then you bought the big drinks. Remember that?
Oh, yes.
And, of course, I knew some people that they would take two cars to the drive-in. They had four children.
Uh-huh.
And they put the children in one car with a speaker, and they got in the other one where that it would be nice and quiet.
Yeah.
I never will forget that.
Yeah, I remember when I was a kid, we used to go to the drive-in, and this is, you know, we were like kids. And so we would all, you know, put on our jammies, and we would pile in the back of the station wagon or the truck or whatever it was at the time. And then you'd take your pillow and you'd take your blanket, you'd pack some snacks, and then you'd go, when you get there, you'd go over to the concession stand and they'd get some more. And we were usually asleep probably halfway through the movie, because we were so little, we would fall asleep during it. And so we never actually finished, you know, the rest of the movie.
But see, I forgot the kids went in their pajamas.
Yeah.
I know on Sunday night, after church, everybody headed to the drive-in. I remember that part.
Yeah.
Okay, now then, how do you think all those marquees got changed? Out front, remember the marquee?
Yeah.
And they had the big letters?
Yeah.
Well, the guy that runs the projection at night, after everything's closed down, if it's time for a new movie, he goes out and he changes the marquee, puts all the letters on about midnight as to what's coming, what the coming attraction's going to be.
Really?
Yeah, that's all done about midnight.
Wow.
Yeah. And most of these guys already own this land in all these places, so they put it on their own property.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, a lot of the people already own the land, so it went out on their property. Now, in some of the towns, that's not true. They bought the property and, you know, put their drive-in theater on it.
Mm-hmm.
But it was big. I can remember how big it was, especially in the 60s and 70s.
Yeah, and I haven't been to the drive-in in so long. Do they still, because I know the last time I went, you, instead of that big clunky speaker hanging on the window, you would get it through your car stereo. Like they give you a frequency, and you tune to that and pick it up through there. Do they still do that?
I don't know. I haven't been in so many years, I could not tell you.
Yeah.
But I know it was fun going to the drive-in, and all of us kids loved them, and I know that the whole thing was good American entertainment.
Yeah, yeah. I remember once you got parked and you put that big speaker and you had that pole right there that you got the speaker out of, and so if you had to go someplace, you couldn't get out the driver's side because the pole was
in there. That's right. and the driver got to turn it up or down. I remember that.
Oh, yeah. They were definitely in charge of the volume.
And can you imagine that everybody had their windows down and just listening to this? Now, if the teenagers got loud, everybody rolled their windows up.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But And then they had places, lawn chairs, you could also sit out on those and watch it.
Uh-huh.
I remember the lawn chairs.
Yeah, yeah. I remember people would, they'd get their lawn chairs set up and they would sit right next to their car and they would, they'd sit there and watch the movie.
Yeah. I mean, that's something that is I thought was completely gone. And then I find out we've got several that started in 09 or 15. I don't know how they plan to keep them going.
I don't know. It's so shocking that they brought these theaters or the drive-in theaters back. I really thought, I was like you, I thought they were a dead breed.
Yeah, I did too. And they may be. I mean, I don't know what they're making because I know of one new one that has gone out of business because there just wasn't enough people coming.
Yeah.
You know, just, there wasn't enough to pay. Because remember, they get this from either United Artists, Columbia. And that's another thing. The way that they get the film. I know used to, they came in a great big truck, and they're in these huge metal containers. And however many reels of film for that, they send that to you, and you have to pay them, you know, for using that film.
Huh.
So, yeah, all the different... Paramount, whoever it is, they control all that film, and they send it to you, and you rent it.
Ooh, you have to rent it and then send it back when it's done?
Then you send it back.
Oh, wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it comes, and then it goes back to the studios. And sometimes they'll say, okay, you tell them what you want that month, what pictures you'd like to show, and they'll tell you which ones are available. They only have so many copies.
Yeah.
So they'll say, okay, you can have, you know, all those, or maybe you can't have all those this month.
Yeah, because there's not enough to go around.
Yeah, so then they advertise which ones they know they're going to get.
Do you remember when you used to go to the drive-in and some moron would always leave his lights on?
Oh, yeah, and he'd come over the speaker.
Yeah.
So-and-so, turn off your light. Oh, my gosh, I forgot about that.
It was never us. It was always the guy that was behind us, you know, and it's like, oh!
Well, what I loved was going in and smelling the popcorn. It's cooking right then.
Oh.
I mean, that popcorn is just popping and popping, and you just get it. Everybody gets it fresh right then.
Oh, yeah.
And they run out of popcorn, and they just keep making it. And, you know, the popcorn machine just fills up with popcorn.
Yeah. So you haven't worked at a drive-in, when the night's over, if there's popcorn left over, do you get to take it and eat it?
I don't think they ever gave anything away. I think you had to account for every little thing. Yeah, I know, no, you would not have been allowed to take that popcorn out.
Well, that's a bummer.
Yeah, I think they would say no, you know. And they tried not to make so much, but what there was, you know, just a little bit left at the end of the night.
Yeah, yeah. Wow, drive-ins, such a nostalgic part of our history, you know.
It is. It's like a lot of other things. It's come and we really enjoyed it, and I thought it was completely gone, and then it's, you know, it's unusual to find out that it is not completely gone.
Yeah, I had no idea they were still building new ones. I thought they were closing them down left and right. That's good to know. That's cool.
Yeah, it is, and of course, some of them are in big cities like Fort Worth, Texas. And then some of them are in small towns. I don't know how that'll work out.
Yeah, I don't either, but it's nice to see it. I hope they can bring it back and make a living at it. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. 877-588-3330. And we're at 3105 Big Spring, right next to Ivy Cottage.
Now, I said that we would get into the types of policies because that makes all the difference in the world. You know, we've explored, you know, how this is wholly this is totally different than investing in the stock market. We've talked about that in quite a bit of detail. But what really makes this work is the types of policies that you're getting, because you're not just bidding on any random policies of people that want to sell their policy and go travel the world. That's not this at all. These are especially highly specific because you're only bidding on policies of people who have stage 4 cancer.
That's right. We discovered this a long time ago, that stage 4 is going to come due sooner, that they're not going to have to wait as long for their money, and it was a specialized thing that we wanted to do. We wanted to specialize in stage 4 cancer. Mm-hmm. And that's why we just buy stage 4. And that's why sometimes it takes longer to get everybody in a policy.
Yeah.
Because we turn down so many policies. Lots of times we get them and they're not that sick. It's not really stage 4, it's stage 3. And we know that they're going to live longer if it's stage 2 or 3. And I know some of the big mutual fund companies will buy it at stage 1 or 2.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't care because if it goes 7 to 8 years, it's not a big deal for them.
Yeah.
And for me, it's a big deal. You know, our people want short-term investments. And that's why we do the types of cancer we do. Because they'll say, no, 30 months, 36, that's about their limit. They don't want to go out any farther than that.
Yeah.
And so they want something that 24 months is usually our average, 22 months. That's about what they want to be in.
Mm-hmm. And that's part of what makes us so great, too, is that the payoffs are quicker, which means people can turn around, reinvest that in another policy quicker. And with it being stage 4 cancer, we all know, I mean, the numbers are there. As human beings, yes, of course, we want people to you know, be able to beat cancer and go on and live a long, healthy life. However, the numbers are there, and we all know how severe stage 4 cancer is. And so that's why you only do these types of policies. But with that, and yes, they do pay off quicker. Yes, the profit margins are better. But there are three main risks that people need to know about when they get involved with a life settlement.
That's right. The biggest risk to everybody is going to be if it goes over. It can go over. It may go a year over, 2 years over. It could go longer than that. But usually, a year over is not a big deal. But if it does go over, you have to be prepared for that. You have to be prepared to make those payments. And they may be $500. They may be $1,000. If it's those old policies, it's more than that. But we're talking about our just the policies we buy nowadays. They're not going to be real high. So the risk is not as great as it used to be because the policies, usually the premium is not very high. We've bought a lot lately, and those premiums are so low, it's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. I know you're talking about some that were like $11 or $49 or something like that.
We've got one that's 11, we've got one that's 49, and those are, lately that we've really noticed that they're small payments.
Yeah.
And we love it. And, of course, we can't even buy a policy if it's over 3.5%.
Mm-hmm.
It's too high. And, people will ask. Our people are pretty sophisticated. They're getting where they ask, how much is the premium going to be on that policy?
Yeah. So that way they know, going in, hey, if it does go over, this is what I'm going to have to pay.
That's right. And so they need to know that. And it used to be on page 14. Now we just say it's 5 pages from the end. but it's really important. It tells them everything. It tells them who the person is, how old they are, whether it's a male or female. It tells you what life insurance company is carrying the paper. It tells you the face amount, what they're going to make, what their risk is. If it goes over, what the premium is going to be. They need to know all that. So then the second risk is it's not liquid during the time it's invested. Everybody needs to know that. If they needed the money in an emergency, it is not liquid. But our people are all sophisticated. They know that going in that it's not liquid till it comes due. So they know that. Then the third thing, of course, is if a life insurance company ever went broke. And thank goodness we've never had one in Texas that didn't pay their claims, that didn't go broke. And we use only A and AA rated life insurance companies. They're the best of the best. They have more premium income than you could even imagine.
Mm-hmm.
So we know that they're safe companies.
So as people start to plan for retirement, they're looking at what they may have now. They may say to themselves, and I've heard people say it, I know you've heard people say it, they'll say, well, I've got $300,000-$400,000 in the bank, I should be fine. If anybody's planning for retirement and they say I should be fine, they're not fine, because retirement is expensive. There's a number of expenses that people don't count on. There's emergencies, they could come up, you may need some extra money for that. So if you're really walking that tight that line of between being okay and maybe I need to work a few more years or whatever the case is, then you've got to have that that buffer in there. You've got to have that padding zone, because if an emergency comes up and you don't have it, now you got a problem.
That's exactly right. And everybody should have more than $300,000, I can assure you of that.
Yeah.
$300,000 is not going to go hardly anywhere. If you're using $50,000 a year, you're going to be out of money in no time.
Yeah, yeah.
So you don't want to do that. You want to have as much as you can get before you retire. Or you need to keep investing. If you've only got $300,000, you've got to keep investing to keep up with your money, where that you're just taking the interest out. And you know, all these gurus are saying people shouldn't take but 4% out of what they've got every year. And that's nothing. Can you imagine if you only take 4%?
Wow, that's not very much.
It'd be hard to live on 4%.
Yeah, folks. It would. There'd be no traveling. There'd be no, you know.
I mean, you'd have to work the rest of your life. But that's what the security people are telling people. You know, 4%. Wow.
So is that magic number still around $1 million that you need to have to retire?
I think you should have at least $1 million. 2 million or three certainly wouldn't hurt you. But not everybody's going to get to that point. Not everybody's going to have $1 million. Not everybody's going to have 2 million. So you have to just work diligently on this and try to increase your net worth every day. You know, you've got to say, okay, this is what we need to do. This is the best plan of attack, and this is what we're going to do to see if we can't have more retirement money than we started with.
Yeah, and I know for many people, hearing that $1 million number, that also is one of those figures that will jar people back into reality, and it can be deflating, really, for some people, demotivational, really, when they say, God, geez, I've only got, you know, a couple hundred thousand, three, four, 500,000 in the bank. But we saw earlier how quickly all this can add up. And so when people say that and they say, geez, I'm nowhere near $1 million, it adds up quickly. You do have to get started. And so, you know, people need to come in. They need to talk to you. They need to kind of have an idea of where they are, when they want to retire. And if somebody's around 45, 50, 55 right now, and they still have, you know, $400,000, $500,000, $600,000 to bridge that gap that they need to get to retirement, you can get them there. They just need to come in and talk to you, right? I mean, it is possible.
Of course it is. And if they're 50 years old, they've got 15 years.
Yeah.
They can make it easy.
Yeah.
You know, it's not going to be that hard. But if they've got 5 years, they need to really get on it.
Yeah, so it just kind of depends where everybody's at right now, when they want to retire. And it could end up being that you could get them where they need to be and go ahead and retire early, which would be a really great surprise.
It is, and a lot of people can do it because they have enough that we start with that we can make it work fairly quick. But, you know, you're looking at 7 years.
Yeah, yeah. It's definitely doable. So when people come in and talk to you like for the first time, if they come and make an appointment to come see you this week, to get an idea of where they are, what should they get prepared before they come see you?
Well, whatever they want me to look at. If it's variable annuities that they've had for 20 years, if they're in the stock market, if it's mutual funds, whatever they want us to look at. You know, and I've got some people that have got accounts in three or four places.
Mm.
It doesn't mean they're making money in all those places. It means they've got accounts in all those places. So they want us to look at them. We need to look at it and see what they're making or not making and what we can do to help.
Yeah. It just helps give you that picture of, you know, here's where you are, here's where we need to be, and here's how we'll go about doing it. You'll put together a strategy and take care of all the hard work. So
That's more time, right.
Faye, I know this is Saturday, and I know nobody's at the office, but you have people call all the time, leave a voicemail, and you'll call them back and schedule some time next week, I assume, right? You have available?
That's exactly right. We'll work with them on it. Okay, the phone number is 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And we're at 3105 Big Spring, right next to Ivy Cottage.
You've been listening to Your Money with Faye Bagby. Sound advice to help your money grow. Listen for Your Money with Faye Bagby every Saturday morning at 10 here on 97 Gold.
This program has been a paid presentation for American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC, and has been brought to you by American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC. The opinions expressed on the program by the host, host guest, and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not represent the opinions of management of this station or Brazos Communications West, LLC, who bear no responsibility or liability for the program's content. The purpose of this radio program is intended to inform the public on financial planning issues and investment products for qualified individuals and investors. Many of the topics and opinions discussed may be of a personal nature, and some people may disagree with or find opinions expressed on this program objectionable. Before you invest, you should consult with financial advisors and review the program prospectus and its risks.